did when I was hanging outside, particularly in this weather, and you don't have a bother opening windows or anything, and worried about, well, the neighbor downstairs is going to see him. I'm going to let it drop. KC2BYB. My question is, with those orange boxes that you're, you know, you always have your equipment in and everything, what kind of equipment and whatever could you put in one of those orange boxes to take, say, to the park and you know, a picnic area, something like that, where your equipment would be stored in there with the radio and everything, and you can just open it up, make a few connections for the power, excuse me, and, you know, what kind of antennas and everything would you have in the orange box, KC2BYB.
All right, so let's address the first comment first, and then it might bring some discussion about from many quarters that I'm suspicious of that. So, you know, if your test was today, and I'm assuming this was 20 meters, I seem to recall that that's where you've been flying lately, I would say that today's been a really good day for propagation. So the fact that you found, quote, better propagation today with the counterpoints inside, I'm not sure that we're at the end of the, shall we say, evaluative period on that. I think you should probably, you know, gather yourself a few more data samples before you come to that conclusion. But neither here nor there, it's still, you know, it's still something to consider. I hear you loud and clear. So anybody want to make some comments about Richard's counterpoise? He basically took a mobile vertical on a mag mount and just added a hunk of wire to the base and just left it around in his apartment. Magically it works, and sometimes he goes out the window and it magically works, so he's suggesting less well. Anybody want to make comments about that? Please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, K2ZO.
Mr. ZO.
When I was in college and living in the garden apartment, I had a wire that went up into the attic and then out the attic vent. And the counterpoise for that was in the living room underneath the rug. I had an insulated wire, had a couple of them, and they ran around in a rectangular pattern, and I had one for 40, I had one for 20, and then I had one for like 15, and I think didn't even bother with one for 10 meters. But I actually put the counterpoise in the house, then rather than hanging on outside where people would see it, and it worked fine.
Well, that's pretty cool. Anybody else?
Who am I?
Tony, go ahead.
I think Richard on his accomplishments tonight should really make a A-B test. In other words, on the same hearing, the same general station, transmitting, run the wire around the room, and then within seconds or minutes, throw the wire up the window. Compare and see if what the difference is on the same AD type test. Take comparing days to days, it's like comparing apples and oranges, because propagation changes so much. Nighttime propagation changes, the daytime propagation, you know. So he has a road to go down yet before he can make a final conclusion. But the big thing is he's got improvement, so that's let him rest on his improvement. But to make a scientific conclusion, he should make an AD test.
Okay, Richard?
Rogers, KC2BYB. I did something very similar to that tonight, Tony. Earlier in the evening, the counterpoise was outside the window, and I was getting a lot of static. My signal was, my receiving signal was fading out and everything, and would come back and fade out. It would just wash right out. Yesterday, I had made contact with some country God knows where. He got my call sign. I didn't get his, and I lost that DX. I know who worked him ahead of me, and hopefully I can get a hold of that person and see if he got the call sign of that station. But like I said, we did do that basically this evening. We were having a lot of trouble, and I wouldn't say a lot of trouble. We were having trouble, and we weren't hearing anything but a lot of static in a lot of places, including the 10-meter band and everything. And then I stretched it out inside the house once I had it in already. And I said, you know, what the heck? And I pulled in. The station from North Carolina was only pushing 50 watts, 50 watts. And I only have a 100-watt radio, no amplifier, etc. And I pulled him right in, and he was able to hear me with no problems either. So we're going to try it again, particularly tomorrow. We go on in the daytime trying to pick up Europe a little bit earlier than late at night. I try to get there since I'm retired. I try to get the European stations before everybody gets home and gets on there and buries me with their 1,500-watt amplifiers and whatever, you know. It's like you're not even there when one of them booms in over you. So we are going to try that another couple of days and see what happens. This is KC2PYB.
Okay, very good, Richard. Anybody have any follow-up? All right. Well, Richard, that was kind of cool. So I'm glad it worked. Jim's story is confirming data of its plausibility, not necessarily of its specific superiority in your case. But I think it's got a certain durability. And, you know, I seem to recall several months back when we first discussed this, suggesting this Rumna counterpoise around your apartment as well. And by gosh, look. Ain't that cool? So you've got quite an acceptable station now that you can run even when it's not socially acceptable to open up that window. I mean, Barbara's a tolerant life, but boy, I can see opening that window on a cold January day as being less than a welcoming thing when the apartment gets cold and drafty because it's, you know, 5 degrees below zero and you decide to get on the vans. So that's a cool thing. Alrighty. Let's see. So anybody else with comments before we move on to the other subject about orange boxes?
N2OEL.
N2OEL, go.
My comment actually covers both. If he goes to a Yahoo group called HFPACK, stands for High Frequency PAC, they have frequencies for low power stations to meet on, and some interesting mental pictures. My favorite one of all was this gentleman who was walking down the country road with a 20-foot high fiberglass antenna out of his backpack, trailing a full-size 40-meter counterpoise. And he was warning about the dangers of not having a quick disconnect, such as an Anderson power pole, because if the snowplow goes by and grabs your wire and you don't have a quick disconnect, you might have problems. So that mental picture stuck with me for quite a period of time. Back to that, this is N2OEL.
Yeah, the HF PAC group is rather, shall we say, full of rugged individualists. I'll leave it at that. Maybe the most tactful way I can describe that group. And I get their list. I'm on their list as well. And I decided a long time ago that I did not need to read the articles one by one as they came in through the day. That it's much more charming to read a day's synopsis at once. So I do it that way. Alrighty. We had a speaker from, the Salvation Army Saturn group, must have been 2 or 3 years ago, who had some of these MTM case guard, MTM Mike Tango Mike hyphen case Charlie Alpha Sierra Echo hyphen guard Golf Alpha Romeo Delta, guard without the U, if you will, MTM case guard. If you just Google them, you'll find their website. And if you Google dry boxes, if you Google MTM dry boxes, you'll probably find it as well. And, I brought stuff in these things and tried a couple of different things. I have one I built an aluminum frame into so I could use things like mobile brackets and things like that. The only concern I had with that is you do need to find a way in a mobile environment, if you're going to use these boxes in a mobile or moving vehicle, to bond all those aluminum pieces together, not by turning together, but ultimately by spot welding them or something. Some of that cold weld stuff might be appropriate to use there. As a suggestion, I have not tried that, but that's one of the things. I actually built an aluminum frame inside so I could manipulate the radio mounts and such. In any case, what can you put in there? I mean, let's think about this. It's summertime. It's getting on toward field day, and we always have the go kit mentality. But maybe we want to do something else. All right. So the two sizes. I mean, I have three sizes, but the two sizes I like are the. I guess this thing's about 10 by 13 by 10. No, it's not even that. It's I guess 10 by 13 by 10. So it's 10 by 13 across the face and about 10 deep. And it's actually a little deeper than that. It's probably like 11 something. But if you want to leave room for knobs and stuff like that, call it 10 by 10 by 10 by 13 and then 10 deep. And then the other one is, I forgot the dimensions. I didn't write them down. About just under 13 inches, maybe 12 and a half, by about 7 and a half. By, let's say just 10 inches, maybe a little less. And so it's like a steroidal ammo box. The other one is more like a portable file cabinet. And, you can do a lot with these things. You can put in a full-blown, like 30 or 40 ampere hour battery, which is not as heavy as a car battery by any means. So it's more manageable. You've got room for a charging circuit, an HF or VHF radio, microphone, notepad, maybe even a little light, and some antennas and coax. You can actually expect to do that on VHF, certainly, without any trouble at all. So if you want to set up in a park and you want to just drag a radio along and you want a nice, neat case, you could do that. You put the batteries in there. In fact, Wayne Electronics has some, I think, their 18 ampere hour steel lead acid, brand new for not too terribly much money, and I thought that might be something to consider to put in there. So something of that nature might be fun. You could build in the mobile bracket and put mount the radio on one of the vertical walls. If you didn't want to screw it through the wall because you're worried about water ingress, I wouldn't worry about it too much. I would screw it through the mount anyway. I'd back it up with some aluminum internally. But I think that if you did that, just a little silicone around where the screws go through the plastic, I think it would be fine. And if you don't do it in the bottom couple inches of the box, if it's standing in water, it's not going to be the big deal. It really isn't. So, you could even potentially have a place to put your supplies on top. The lids of these boxes are the little secret of them, because all your adapters and your specialized cables and markers and little doodads can go in the lid, which flips up separately. So I think there's things you can do that way. That's like a VHF kind of a rendition. I'm going to talk about an HF rendition about how you do this in a moment. Anybody have any questions about, what we've covered so far? One thing I'm thinking is maybe a kit night. well, I can't be there. Maybe we can do that. We can have some guys do some special stuff. Or maybe we can have a special MCOM meeting one time and, you know, kind of have a workshop where you bring your stuff and we just kind of, like, throw together supplies and maybe, you know, make a run of for small amounts of aluminum to Home Depot or something while pizza's ordered. And then in the afternoon we start grilling and hacking and start putting something together. Maybe we could do something like that. We could piece things together in the morning and then figure out what you need and then go get the hardware over lunch while the pizza's being ordered and then build it in the afternoon. That might be a fun project, that kind of thing. In any case, let's go on to an HF rig. Okay, HF stations are a little more complicated. If you use the larger case, and I say that's 10 by 13 across the aperture and then about 10 plus inches deep, it can get very heavy. I would not recommend putting in that same box a switching supply and, in close proximity, the antenna. I would actually take the, if it's a switching supply, I would make sure it comes out because if God forbid there's an antenna mounted on top of this thing, it's going to really spoil your day. The RF is going to basically get back into the power supply and just trash the power supply. So that's number one. Number two, it's going to get a little heavier if you put a big battery in there. So one thought is if you have a, you know, if you have something like a 706 or an 857, a 480, like Jim has a 480, a 7000, those kinds of radios can probably fit inside one of these big cases with a tuner and all the accessories there. And then what you do is carry a second box for your power. Make your power box separate from your radio box. I think that's probably prudent. I think that would be a good idea. One more thing about the power box. I actually have these rig runner strips, and a 12 position rig runner strip will fit, actually an 8 or a 12, will fit in a pre-existing slot on the small, on the steroidal ammo box size lid. So you actually can have the power already rooted in there, just flip the lid up and away you go. Or you could mount it inside the lower main compartment, either way. So there's some options there, too. But that's pretty much what I would suggest, is putting the rig and all your station stuff in one box and put power in it in a different box. I think that would be a good idea. Switching, switching power supply or a charging circuit, maybe a voltage booster and the battery in one box and then everything else in the other. I think you could have a really nice two-box station where they use two of the smaller boxes or a smaller box for power and a bigger box for a rig, depending on your preference. So, Richard, that was my answer. I do want to bring up something else. In a separate product line, they came up with a Survivor dry box. And this is a very nice little thing. It's got attachment points. It's got three clamps on it as opposed to one or two. And it's got, on the bottom, it's got a reflective surface if you need a mirror, God forbid, and more importantly, a compass. So if you're on the road and you want to know which way is north because you want to point the antenna back towards someplace, compass is actually built into the lid of the Survivor dry box, which I thought was kind of cool. And in case you don't like orange, they do. Some of these boxes come in camo or black. They do come in, and maybe OD green, I forget, but you don't have to, if you're aesthetically conscious, and, for you, orange just doesn't work. You do have choices. So, Richard, did I answer your question? Does anybody else have any comments? Well, let me start there. Anybody else have any comments?
I have a question. That's Loyal.
Yeah, go ahead, Noel.
One of the problems, of course, you run into is some rigs do not like it when the battery starts out at 12.8 volts and goes down to 12.2. They don't function. You bought a very nice device to solve that problem. Perhaps you could expand on that and to OEM.
Yeah, actually I can. It's the N8XJK. November 8, X-ray, Juliet, Kilo, boost regulator. And if you Google boost regulator, you'll probably find it. They come in a bunch of different models. I have the 100-watt model with no fan because I'm looking to save battery power. I'm not looking to do that. If you ran it in a car, you might be tempted to get the 200-watt model with the fan and the whole bit, and that's kind of cool. But yeah, the way my station, my portable box is, I use a smaller one if I had it, not because I prefer it, actually. I think all things being equal, I'd probably move the power supply into the bigger boxes one day in the future. But the upshot is that you come off the 38 ampere hour steel lead acid into one side of a power gate, which is a West Mountain Radio charging circuit. And on the other side, you go to a switching power supply or your 12-volt source, so say from your car or whatever. The sensor comes out and goes to the boost regulator, which takes 12 volts or however much it sags is well applied. And then in a very efficient way, it's not just a straight switch. It's a switch to add the delta voltage. And so it only has to produce, let's say, a few volts and then sum it with whatever the sagged voltage is from the input. It sums the two and does it highly dynamically, by the way, and gives you out whatever you've predefined the output to be until the input gets down to a certain level where you can have it cut off or protect the battery from permanent harm. So that works out pretty well. MSK makes a similar product. I've heard stories that I would not recommend it. It's not as seemingly well built. So that's something to consider as well. Okay, well, did I answer that part of the question? N2OELWTTTK2BAR. Alright, so that's basically what that is. So, and then I took the output of the boost regulator and put it into a rig runner. Usually, if it's in the power box, it's into a 4012S. No, actually, not the S. I don't think it's the S. 4012. And that gives me 12 outlets to play with. And does, you know, what's nice about the rig runner is that it gives you both overvoltage and undervoltage indications, and will give you an audible for either or, whichever you prefer. And I can honestly tell you that having that, I have one bolted into my truck, and when my regulator, my truck went goofy, returning from Florida 4 years ago, I was able to manage myself safely off the highway to a place where I could get a new alternator regulator and get it replaced on a Saturday night, Sunday morning, and be on my way the next day without a problem. So it all worked out very, very nicely. For a lot of reasons, these things are useful. So, anyway, oh, there's one other thing. I developed a couple of these for specialized purposes. I have a separate router access point, a wireless router access and access point at both, and miscellaneous antennas, fittings, Anderson power poles, etc. So I actually have a portable Wi-Fi setup that I can deploy, and that occupies one of my boxes now. So it's a predefined kit. You add to it. It's got also a half watt 18 dB preamp type amplifier, a bidirectional amplifier, and some other goodies. All the cables you need, some funky antenna to extend the Wi-Fi as needed. We're starting on a kit for that as well. I'll be working with Carl W2KBF with some of the stuff he's bought recently to come up with an HSMM system, which is image radio, high-speed multimedia, essentially amateur Wi-Fi at 2.4 gig. And you'll be able to use it with your standard laptops and other wireless access devices. So again, you can develop specialized kits for this stuff, and these boxes are like, you know, 10, 15 bucks a piece or something like that, 15 bucks a piece, so they're not horribly expensive, and they do work. And just so you know how wide they are, I can actually slide some of those blue and gray Linksys boxes into it very nicely, and it fits inside without its antennas on. But the point is I can put it inside and store it nice and neatly, and everything is happy and hunky-dory. And so I have a quick, ready-to-go kit of goodies should I need to. And as I said, I have the hand-flight amplifier and another box inside, along with AC modules and you know, if I want to use the wall warts and jumper cables and all that other good stuff. So it's all here in a little kit. So we can do that as well one night, so when people are so inclined. So you can have Wi-Fi on the run. My next goal, by the way, is to get one of those 3G cards and actually have a 3G card and plug it into a modem to provide amateur Wi-Fi to the internet from a portable location. I thought that might be kind of cool. So that's one of the next tasks in this little sequence of projects related to orange boxes. Alrighty. Richard, back to you, sir, with any comments you might have.
This KC2PYB, no, that answers my question. Thank you.
Okay. Well, one of the goals is to basically do HSMM over a fair distance using laptop cameras, things like that. They make Wi-Fi cameras now, where the camera is a Wi-Fi device in its own right, and so you can link it back over Wi-Fi back to a computer, and then go from there. So you attach it the same way you would a printer or a scanner or anything else, so, except it's an IP device. I think that's going to get kind of some good attention over time. So we, again, shall see. Let's see. Oh, one other thing I've been planning to do, and Richard, you and I were at an opportunity where we discussed this once before. You can take some of these taller utility boxes, these 10-inch boxes, those ones that are 10 inches tall, and whether they're the big fat ones or the more, as they say, super ammo box size, you can put a piece of PVC in the corner. You can just epoxy it in or JB weld it in or whatever you want to do. You don't even need to use, screws and bolts. And you can make a socket in the corner of the box that allows you to put a J-pole base right there in the box so that the radio will essentially support a J-pole on the radio, or at least the power supply will support a J-pole. And you just by bringing a piece of tubing that sits underneath the J-pole, the length of the J-pole, just, you know, bungee them together or use the Velcro strips, which I prefer these days because they don't snap and hurt your fingers and get in your eye and such. But the point is, if you take a piece of tubing the size of a 2-meter J-pole and just don't solder it to the bottom of the T, slide it into the bottom of your J-pole, slide it into the tubing, the PVC tubing that's inside your utility box. Now you have a stable platform, and oh, let's say your J-pole is, you know, 5 or 6 feet off the ground, which, you know, for a lot of applications, having the base of a J-pole 5 or 6 feet off the ground is more than adequate. So consider that another useful option that you can kind of parlay into success using these orange boxes. Essentially, it becomes an antenna base for your antennas, your portable antennas. Now, what you do is you put it on a picnic table, and now it's 10 feet in the air, or more, probably 12 feet in the air, 15 feet, or 14 feet in the air, 15 feet in the air, and you've got a very respectable 2-meter or whatever, even HF potentially, antenna that's sitting underneath your, or sitting using your batteries as a support could even possibly just run PVC tubing straight up and make your make that a center support for a dipole, and just run it off into some trees somewhere for the end. So, all sorts of options is what I'm saying here. You can use these boxes very intelligently if you just plan what your stuff is. Okey-doke. Well, I have not heard. I have not seen. We have not heard. Never mind. All right. I heard anything else on that, so I guess we will move on. Any other check-ins, comments, questions, confusions from that, please call KQBAR.
Who am I?
Tony, go right ahead.
It's been rumored that there's something happening this weekend that might be of interest to some of the Barra members. It's called the BHF contest, and Barra is planning to definitely perform in the contest. And Rain or Shine will be out there Saturday with 100% chance of rain, and Sunday with no rain until late afternoon. So I'd really like to encourage anybody listening to think no rain. Think contest. Think of Armstown Nike site, and come up and join us.
Yeah, and let me just say this. I mean, I'm going to be out of town, but, you know, on a mandatory business trip. But if you forget where to go or not sure where to go and can't get a hold of anybody, just Google Nike Road and Orangetown, and you'll be all set. You'll get there. Just go. Continue to go up. Up is the answer. VHF, UHF signals don't do well down. They do well up. So I would encourage people to do that as well. Tony, is there not a work party going with that too?
There's going to be a work party meeting 8 o'clock in the morning at the Barra Garage. Those who don't know where it is can find out either by emailing me or we don't like to advertise it here on the repeater, but it's in the Dumont area. The work party will load the rented trucks on Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. We'll seat up to the mountain and assemble and get on the air by 2 with many stations before we open. And then reverse the situation sometime after 2 or 3 on Sunday, depending upon conditions. Everything's going to be back in the garage before the rain comes, maybe before the darkness comes. But on directions, so if you go to the Barra website, www.barra.org, and you go to directions, to one of the toolbars on the left side, and you look for the VHF contest site, there is a Google map that's there, and you can play with the Google map and figure out where you are. It's really only about 2 miles below the 495 entrance to the Tappan Zee Bridge. It's just off of 303. And the name of the street that you want to make a turn on is called Spruce Street. So going north on 303, just a Spruce Street, take Spruce Street with the right turn, go to the top of the mountain. There's one intersection, it's a four-way intersection. And at that four-way intersection, you make a right turn. Then you're on Tweed Boulevard. Tweed Boulevard takes you to Nike Lane. Nike Lane, the top of Nike Lane is where the contest site is. If anybody has any questions, they can Google me or they can email me or pick me up on the computer.
Any questions for Tony? Any aforementioned volunteers or interest? I know a lot of guys signed up the other night and otherwise contacted Tony. Anybody new?
Other comments?
Yeah, Tony.
There will be a two-meter station listing on 146535 Simplex. That's Simplex with no tone, 146535. It's a frequency that's used by many hands. Hopefully, the Saturday afternoon chatter will let us use the frequency for contesting. But look for us there. If you don't get us with one call, try an hour later. There will be a two-meter radio on the air. Monitoring that frequency most of the contest. But obviously if there are rare grid squares coming in, or grid squares we haven't worked, unfortunately they take priority over and I've had contact. But of course, on 146.535. We also will be operating on 446.100. I think that's it. Oh my gosh, I've lost the tune. Who's the 440? The press frequency is there. Towards it up. 446 or 444. 446 triple zero.
Right, it's 446 triple zero. It's 146.535. We cannot use 146.52. That's the only that and repeater inputs and outputs are banned. But 146.535. 446.0, and if they have the capacity, they'll be on 223.5. Others certainly will be 223.5, which is the 220 national simplex frequency. And if you're also somewhat limited on your antenna on 6 meters and there's not a lot of propagation, just for grins, 52.525. 52.5. FM, or as Steely Dan used to say, FM. Never mind. All right. Any more from about that, Tony? W2TT2.
That safety, I hate to admit it, but Barron does not monitor 50.525 FM. There have been so few contacts and previous contests. But you may find others, so make some contact. Get in the log.
Yeah, absolutely. 223.5 you do monitor, right?
Sweet. That's our third in the line of the FM contact. 223.500. It's our, again, FM, simplex, no tone, and the first there. But again, don't give one call and walk away because you don't get it. We'll be there for over 24 hours, and it should be easy to contact us at least once during that 24-hour period.
Right, and there's also a point in Rivervale where you can work the club from different grid squares. Just identify Rover, and if you're in a grid square, other than when you're either with your home and work them, or whether or not you were also mobile, just go around and you can work not only T2ER but other stations again on the air. We encourage you to do so. The other thing is that the rules say you have to have at least, I think, 3 other stations in your log in order to be credible for Barra. Otherwise they start wondering if you're a captive rover. So please feel free to work others as well. In the grand scheme of things, you're going to only add precipitously to Barrett's score compared to others anyway in this immediate area. I will be mobile starting about the time of the contest, heading down. Well, I'll work a couple of stations in FN 30, then I will enter FN 20, and then I work my way down the parkway to Route 78, go across the plateaus, and then down into Bedminster, across the river, through the woods, to William Penn's colony, take that down to Interstate 81, and I'll be heading that down. I forget where I have to jog my way over west a little bit. I think it's in North Carolina, South Carolina, I can't remember, but it's about 26, if I remember right, and find my way over to 85, to Hotlanta. You'd have to be there by... We'll have to be in a classroom at 7 o'clock in the morning on Monday, so I can learn how to be a cable splicer. So I suspect I will be operating a good amount of the contest rover, sleeping in appropriately well-staffed rest areas, and crashing into my hotel early in the late afternoon from Echo Mike 85, I guess it would be. I think that's Hotlanta. Decatur, places like that. So I look forward to working anybody who might be around on the way down, especially on 6 meters, once I get out of the FN 30, FN 20, FM 29, or whatever. I guess it'll be 29 or 19, probably 19, or FN 10. Trying to figure out where I'm going to be dropping out. I guess it's FN 10. So go to 20 to 10 to FN 19. So it's approximately like 19. So that'll be interesting. So and then on down. So look forward to working with you and doing the rover thing. So Tony, I should be good for a few contacts. What is our typical? We usually camp out somewhere on 2 meters and 6 meters. What are our typical frequencies? Do you remember?
In the word typical does not make too much sense, but generally you're above 130, 50.130 to 50.140 in that area on 6. On 2 meters, we don't really point, but generally we're out of the lower end of the band. We're not down on 120, we're above that someplace. Don't look for us too close to the bottom frequency.
Okay, my last question is Jim and S2K planning to be up there a good amount of the time? Because if possible, I could ring him on my phone, or he could ring me on mine, ring him on his, or he could ring me on mine. If any of you have any email for me, you probably have my signature block and have my cell phone on it. So if you want, you can alert me as to, you know, maybe possible set schedule time, so we could actually make a point as I enter different grids. We could, you know, give you a new grid, new contact on a couple of bands. Over.
Jim had better be there, because he's got an awful lot of food that he's already purchased, and he's got the cooking material and the facility there, the little grill that he's using. So he will be there. His primary function is to supply food, but we'll be operating also.
Okay, very good. Well, I think it should be interesting. Why don't you describe for us what you're planning to use on 6 meters, 2 meters, 220, and 432 for rigs and antennas and maybe dare I say amplifiers. That might be fun for people to hear, for those who are not used to operating anything more than an FM transceiver or even just a small HF transceiver. Over.
But not a quick rundown. We're running converted heat kit, a kilowatt, 20 for a kilowatt on 6 meters. We'll be running a Lunar Link kilowatt amplifier on 2 meters, and an AM6145 on 222. Unfortunately, on the 432 band, we do not have an amplifier. We're running 100 watts. I've tried to get the amplifiers running enough power, and I've been very successful in sight at a major failure, so I'm going to cross off the 432 amplifier. We'll be using antennas like you can't describe them. We'll be using two towers with two rotators, and hopefully it will work. But it's getting late, and I think people are falling asleep, so don't go for too much longer, Gordon.
Okay, what are you using for exciters and receivers on those bands? And then we'll just call it quits there.
We're going to use the 56 Pro 3 on 6, and on the 432 and 220 bands, we'll be using Icon 910. Bennett has got one, and Joe Barber's got the other. And on the 220 band, I'll be using a 736, the 225 watt rig that will be driving the amplifier to approximately 300 watts.
That's a nice station all around. Okay, very good. All right, everybody, any last comments, questions, confusions, please call K2VAR.
KC2PYV with a short question.
Sure, Richard, go ahead.
You said FM when you were talking about the 2-meter band. Originally, I was told you stay on upper sideband for that.
Okay, yeah, there's two different segments, and you can work a station on either mode, but not both in a given grid square. So, Richard, the information we've given about upper sideband around 144-200, plus or minus 100 kilohertz, is fine. But if you're going to use FM, you can, on 15 kilohertz rasters, use 146.535, which is what Barra is using, 146.535. And then you can do 55, 565, 58. And then 147.51, 147.25, 147.54, 147.555, although I would generally avoid that because the NRRL uses that for their bulletins and their code practice and things. You actually can hear that here, at least I can. And 147.57 would be the last frequency. So all of those are valid for FM contacts. Any other frequency is valid as well, as long as it's not a repeater input or output. But it would cause harmful interference to a repeater. If it's not used in an area for a repeater, it's fair game to use for simplex if you so desire. But the sideband portion is, 144, 200 plus or minus, let's say 100 kilohertz.
Fixed station would be on the upper sideband, say. If you went mobile on a rover, just use the FM.
That's true for most people. I mean, there are people who do go rover with sidebands. In fact, I will be doing both.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, that was good. And, alrighty, folks, if anybody has any questions, during the contest and you want to throw a question out like, where are you or something like that, you can always call me. You can send me a text message or call me. And you can also send me an email, wt2ttt@att.net. That will work, or arrl.net. And assuming I have internet coverage, you should be able to get that to my laptop while I'm on the roll. I might not see it immediately, but, it's a good sign, a good chance I will. Text messages I will see, because I'll have them forwarded to a very large screen that will actually enunciate them, which is kind of cool. And let's see what else. That's pretty much it. Any last comments? K2BR.
K2 Zulu Charlie.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, my question is setting up SCEDs via cell phone. Is that legal?
Yeah, it is for rovers and for multi-ops. It's not for, in fact, it's legal for single-ops as long as it's done before the contest.
Okay. Thank you. This is Kilo 2 Zulu Charlie, clear.
Yeah, for a single-op station, which by definition a rover is not, even if there is only a single-op, in order to be unassisted, they can't have any of that stuff. No DX spotting, no cell phone, none of that stuff, no text messaging. But anything that's intrinsically multi-op can do that. And everybody can set up a SCED in advance. That's fine as well. You can have a schedule to go at it with somebody. And that's pretty cool as well. By the way, one of the things I was pleased to find recently was that the W2SZ group, I believe, is using a Pro 3s on 6 meters. And of all things, IC-746 Pros on their 2-meter station, which I thought was pretty cool. I may have that wrong. It may be IC-746 Pros on both 6 and 2, but I think it's just on 2. But considering what were the punishing environments in which the 2-meter operators operate, the 6-meter operators operate, it's a tribute to Barra to have these fine radios available for guys to operate in. And I got to tell you, the 910 has a lot of similar DNA in it, and you might consider this opportunity. With decent power, an outrageous location, very good antennas, relatively short feed lines, and a good receiver just to go out and, go kick some butt. So, this is a good opportunity to be a VHF operator. I will say, based on the propagation, I think I made about a dozen contacts on 6 meters today in between my work tasks. I took a few minutes here and there and operated a couple of minutes here and there and just made some 6 meter contacts all day. I suspect that that's what we're going to see through the weekend, in the afternoon in particular, maybe again in the morning, and then maybe again in the evenings like we did tonight. So, on that note, anything else? KQB Air. Alrighty, I'd like to thank K2ZO, K2DSL, K2AMI, KC2PYB, K2BDU, KC2UWV, N2OEL, AC2X, K2Zulu Charlie, and N2CYY for checking in and contributing to a nice lively dialogue tonight. Once again, we proved that people's presence here without even a question raised issues and provided for some discussion that got other people interested in various topics. So thank you very much for making yourself known and present. Next week, you'll have a guest operator being the net control, and I'll be back the following week. Until we get Echo Link on this puppy, I'm not going to be doing it by remote control. So, in any case, thank you very much, everybody. Have a great evening. And this is W2TTT for K2BAR, the station, the Bergen Amateur Radio Association, thanking the Bergen County FM Association, our brother club, for the use of their repeaters, and wishing you all a pleasant night. This is W2TTT.